This is WHCC in Holland. Time now for Talk to Town, the program in which you, the listeners, participate with your telephone calls. Our Talk of the Town number 395-1450, and it's our day this morning with the attorney, and we have Attorney Ken Puzicki with us. Good morning, Ken.
Hey, good morning, Juke.
What's new on the legal front?
Well, the clock has started, so let's get rolling, right?
All right.
Nothing earth-shattering.
Nothing earth-shattering.
But since I was here last, we've had two situations that I want to talk about briefly. The first is this 13-year-old little girl in California. You know, she went in for a tonsillectomy. Something went horribly wrong. Mm-hmm. And she lapsed into a catatonic state. And I don't know if you recall seeing that on the news. The parents and the family wanted to keep her on life support.
Yeah.
And the state of California not only said no, but they issued a death certificate, which appalls me. But it brings to the point, having a healthcare power of attorney in effect.
Good idea.
Well, would certainly pave the way.
We have a call.
Wow, that's quick.
Good morning. You're online with your attorney.
Yes, I'm looking for snow and ice removal numbers.
Yeah, I don't have those with me at the moment. We have the attorney in the early part of our program here, but call back after 10 o'clock, about 12 minutes after 10.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
All right,
thank you
so much. Bye.
Although I'm looking for a reason to get out of the office, and I am full of hot air, I mean, I could probably get out there and
melt some snow.
Absolutely.
All right.
I didn't say that, did I?
What's the other thing that we have to be concerned about?
Well, the other is this woman down in Texas. She was 14 weeks pregnant, and I don't know the medical situation, why she was without oxygen for so long, but she was without oxygen for a lengthy period of time.
Mm-hmm.
And again, she went on life support, and the issue was, can they take this woman off of the ventilator? And in Texas, there's a law that says you can take somebody off of life support unless they're pregnant. And the law specifically says you cannot take anybody off life support if they're pregnant.
Right.
And as recently as about 2 weeks ago, I think they must have gone through some kind of judicial system, and they actually got a court order permitting them to take her off of life support. Now, the irony there is Michigan's statute is identical.
Mm.
Michigan's, when I sit down with people to do a healthcare directive, part of that involves what the patient advocate can and cannot do. And Michigan statute specifically says you cannot take somebody off life support if they're pregnant. So we may have to change that law in Michigan.
Good morning. You're online with the attorney.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I was just wondering how the attorney felt about prepaid funerals. And I'll hang up and listen, okay?
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you.
Actually, I was on my way in today, I was thinking about things to talk about, and that's one of them.
Oh, really?
Yeah. The prepaid funeral concept. I mean, generally speaking, I think it's a good idea. However, for Medicaid planning purposes, it may not be a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Because the funeral contract is the one thing you can spend to get rid of your money in order to qualify for Medicaid.
Right.
Okay. I'm all in favor of pre-planning your funeral, but prepaying it a lot of times turns out to be detrimental if you go into a long-term care facility and you need Medicaid.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because you know if you go into a nursing home, you need to get rid of a certain amount of your money, and buying a funeral or paying for a funeral at that time is a way to get rid of that money.
That's right.
So pre-planning. Absolutely. Prepaying, I'm not so keen on.
Okay. Good morning. You're online with the attorney. And I guess
I must answer their question.
Caller.
Yeah. But
okay.
And it goes to show, Juke, that a lot of times you want to follow your gut instinct. Let's prepay the funerals.
Mm-hmm.
Let's pay off the credit cards. Let's pay off the mortgage. Let's do things that sound intuitive, but a lot of the things that you do out of intuition turn out to be absolutely the opposite of what you should be doing for estate planning purposes, and a lot of times for long-term care Medicaid purposes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the best example of that is a married couple. Okay, let's say you got a married couple. They're in their late 80s, early 90s, and one of them starts to show signs of either dementia or some health situation that they know that person is going to have to go into a skilled nursing care facility. And they know that it costs $8,000 or so a month, anywhere between $6,500 and $8,500 a month. Now, intuitively, they think, let's hurry up and buy things. Let's get rid of that money.
Yeah.
So that we can get on Medicaid quicker. Okay. The reality is that is not the thing to do. You want to pay those things after you put somebody in the nursing home. Why is that? Well, when you have a married couple, the healthy spouse gets to keep half of the assets.
Right.
And if they've got $100,000 worth of assets, the healthy spouse can keep 50. Okay. But that $100,000 is determined at the time the person goes in the nursing home. Well, if they spend $40,000 before they put the person in the nursing home, they went from $100,000 of assets down to $60,000. Now the healthy spouse can only keep $30,000
yeah.
rather than
$50,000. So, thought we had someone on there. Apparently not.
No, just a nibble.
Let's see if they're... No,
so back to the caller's question, okay? With the married couple with $100,000, and let's say they've got a house and a car. If they've got $100,000 in assets, the healthy spouse, if one of them goes into a nursing home, the healthy spouse can keep half of $100,000.
Right.
They can keep 50. But again, your instinct says, well, honey, before we put you in the nursing home, let's hurry up and we'll prepay your funeral. We'll prepay the healthy spouse's funeral. We'll put a new roof on the house. We'll redo the kitchen. We'll get rid of some money so that we don't have as much when we put her in the nursing home. Okay. The problem with that is you go from $100,000 down to $60,000. Now the healthy spouse can only keep $30,000.
Yeah, that's right.
And she has to get rid of $30,000. What is she going to spend it on? You've already paid for the things that
right.
you needed to do.
Good morning. You're online with the attorney.
Yeah, I just wanted my case in Hollywood. Had a lady lost her money. Can he be brought back for criminal charges? Again, and I'll hang up and listen.
I'm not familiar with the facts of the case. Are you, Juke?
No, I'm not.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about that case?
Well, the lady from Holland inherited $100,000.
Yep.
And she let a friend take care of it.
Oh.
She trusted a friend.
Yeah.
Now I guess he run off and he's in California, the latest I heard. And she promised a good return. And the last she called to check on it, it was frozen. So,
wow. Is his name Bernie Madoff?
Yeah. Well, similar, I would think.
Well, and the outcome's going to be similar, too.
Yeah,
if you've got scoundrels like that, and they're out there, believe me,
yeah.
they're out there. The reality is, if she filed a lawsuit against him, he probably doesn't have it to give back.
Probably not.
So she could get a judgment against him, and he might do some time for criminal fraud.
Yeah.
But the reality is, will she get that money back?
Probably not.
I'm not going to bet anything on it.
Yeah.
So it's unfortunate, but it happens.
Yeah.
Way, way more often than we even know about.
I would think so.
Yeah,
thanks, Ken.
You bet. Good question.
Thank you. 395-1450 is our number if you'd like to give us a call this morning. And we have the attorney with us in the studio. And if you have a question that is a legal type question, give us a call. 395-1450. Line's open now. All right. Not getting any calls at the moment, Ken.
All right. Oh, so I get to... Speak off the cuff, huh?
Yeah.
All right.
Speak off the cuff.
Yeah. But again, we would talk about things, you know, things that people do because they intuitively think that they're appropriate. Well, the reality is, and you know, the for good, bad, or otherwise, the law can be complicated. Medicaid rules are certainly complicated,
yes.
And then you've got the IRS. Okay. A lot of times, people do things thinking that they're going to save taxes when, in fact, they might end up paying double or triple what they would
have.
I thought
they just checked your emails and your phone calls.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. But the reality is if you know, there are people who have tried to play the rules to their advantage.
Yeah.
And if there are such loopholes, the government closes them up. And there's really, you know, a lot of people think that they're trying to outwit the system. But the reality is the system is in place. The laws are in place. There's really no slick and easy way to save taxes or to get something for nothing. It's just not there. And if you do something, you might end up violating a criminal law, fraud. IRS gets all over that. And you might end up making more of a mess for your kids than you thought. A lot of people do things thinking they're making things easier for the kids,
yeah.
But at the end of the day, they made a bigger mess than they otherwise would have had if they hadn't have done anything in the first place.
Yeah, okay, got another call here, I think. Good morning, you're online with the attorney.
Hello.
Yes.
I have to file for my income tax refunds, but where do you get the forms?
Well, do you have access to the Internet?
I'm home, that's all.
Oh, okay. Well,
I went to this library, but yep. They didn't have enough of the forms there.
Yeah, you know, most people are getting their forms off the Internet. I know once upon a time you used to go to either the post office or the library to get those forms. I don't know how many people still do that.
Yeah.
But if, you know, if you've got somebody who has Internet access, they can get onto the state website and download those forms pretty darn easily. So
otherwise, call Evergreen Commons.
Yeah, there you go. Go to Evergreen Commons. I'm sure they'll have them. Or if they don't have them, they can download them for you.
All right, thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Bye.
Thanks, Duke. You saved my bacon on that one.
Okay. I think we got another call coming in here. No, I guess not. Okay.
Yeah.
395-1450 is our number, and we'd be happy to hear from you this morning.
Yeah.
Take the advice of an attorney this morning. It doesn't cost you anything.
Yeah, it's freebie.
Here.
That's right. Now, so the upshot is, you know, if you want to make things smooth for your kids, if you want to minimize your taxes, you're better off contacting a CPA or an attorney, and you know, spending a few bucks. But at the end of the day, you're actually gonna come out ahead. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Good morning. You're online with the attorney.
I'm in the process of filling out a designation of patient advocate form.
Good.
Do I have to have an attorney to make that?
No, ma'am. No, ma'am. In fact, you can go to your doctor's office or you can go to the hospital, and they have the state-approved forms there.
This man from our church had ordered them, and he had to get 20 at a time.
Hmm.
I really don't know where he ordered them from unless it was the government or something.
Well, yeah, the state actually has what I'll call the state of Michigan has what I call a state-approved form. Now, it's a very basic designation of patient advocate, but it works.
Oh, this says at the bottom, Michigan Health and Hospital Association.
Good.
MHA.
Good. And that document will let you name somebody with a couple successors in case the first person isn't around. And that document will allow you to pick one of three different choices in terms of long-term life support.
Okay.
And there's a box there that says, I either want a feeding tube or I don't want a feeding tube. That is, everybody over the age of 18 ought to have one of those documents.
Well, I'm working on mine. Thank you.
Good. You bet. Thank you.
All right. No calls at the moment.
Yeah.
All right.
But no, she brings up a good point. You don't have to go to an attorney to get a patient advocate designation. Now, most attorneys, mine included, will go beyond what the state form
mm-hmm.
has. Okay, I've got a provision for cremation versus burial. I've got a provision for anatomical gifts. I've got a provision for, you know, different things that, you know, the state form doesn't address. But the reality is that if you want to appoint somebody, the state-approved form is available at your doctor's office. It's available at the hospital. I don't know if they probably have them over at Evergreen, too.
I think
you can buy them by the hundreds, and
right.
But they're very valid, and you do not have to have an attorney to walk through that.
Good morning. You're online with the attorney.
Yeah, I have a question. When somebody dies, Do you always have to go to probate court?
Not if I can help it.
Okay.
No, the short answer is no. Okay, here's what the answer to your question, your question can be asked another way. Okay, when you die, all of your assets, somebody's going to take a look at each of your assets and determine where those assets go. For example, if you have a bank account and you've got your daughter's name on there with you as a co-owner, if you die, that bank account goes to your daughter. That asset does not have to go to probate, because it automatically went to your daughter. If you got an IRA and you name your kids as the beneficiary, when you die, that IRA goes to your kids. That does not have to go to probate. So what a lot of people do is they will put their kids' names on all their assets so that when they die, their assets automatically go to their children, and then you don't have to go to probate. You only have to go to probate court when you die and there's an asset that doesn't have anybody else's name on it. For example, your house. Okay? If your name is the only name on the deed to your house and you die, it doesn't go anywhere automatically. That means we have to go to probate to figure out what to do with it. Okay?
Okay.
Now,
so if you have your name on, like with your mother, mm-hmm. Then when she dies, then everything, you get everything then.
Yes,
right?
Ma'am. Yep.
Your name's on it.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep, that's one way to avoid probate. Now, the problem is if mom's got five kids and she puts your name on all of her assets, what is she expecting you to do when she dies?
Yeah.
Are you going to keep everything, or are you going to split it with your brothers and sisters?
Okay.
The plan is whoever's name is on it is supposed to split it with their brothers and sisters. The reality is that happens maybe 5 or 6 times out of 10. But a lot of times that child who's got their name on the farm or the bank account, they end up keeping that money and their brothers and sisters don't get anything.
Okay.
And that's where the concept of a trust comes in. So the things get divided equally between the kids. But my job is, I don't like wearing ties. I don't think Juke has ever seen me with a tie on. But
I don't think so.
Yeah, but I have to put a tie on if I have to go to court. So I'm very self-centered that way. But I want to keep you out of probate court because, quite frankly, it's expensive to go through the probate system too.
Yeah.
My job is to help save money on the front end so that I don't have to wear a tie on the back end.
Okay.
Good question. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. Do you have to wear a tie in court?
but I say that jokingly, of course. But the reality is a lot of times when we do a probate, it's all done over the mail.
Yeah.
You know, but when we do have to go to court, you know, if there's a question as to who the executor should be or who's going to get this asset or that asset, yeah, the attorney's got to dress up and go to court. And, you know, at a couple $100 an hour, that can add up real quick.
Yes, it can.
Yeah.
It can.
Yeah.
Good morning. You're online with the attorney.
I have a question this morning, and you may have covered this, but in the state of Michigan, what assets can a person hold if they're before they're eligible for Medicaid?
Good question. Generally speaking, you're allowed to have a car. Okay, they don't count your car. Now that car could be, you know, an '83, you know, Chevrolet Malibu, or it could be a 2014 Lamborghini. Okay, they don't look at the value. Now, if I were writing the rules, there would be a dollar limit on the value of the vehicle. But Michigan Medicaid rules allow you to have a vehicle. Okay, they also allow you to have a home. Now, if you're single, the value of that home cannot be more than $535,000, and that adjusts for inflation every year. I think that the number now is probably closer to $540,000 or maybe $550,000. But you're allowed to have a home, you're allowed to have a car, and you're allowed to have stuff in the house. So if you've got furniture, if you've got tools, if you've got jewelry, if you've got fine artwork, everything in the house is exempt. Okay, so you're allowed to have a house, a car, and the stuff in the home itself. Now, if you're single, you cannot have more than $2,000 in other stuff. In terms of checking accounts, savings accounts, CDs, IRAs, 401ks, life insurance, investments, that stuff is all countable, and you have to spend all of that money down to $2,000. So in order to be eligible for Medicaid, you can have a house, a car, but your other assets have to be below $2,000. Okay?
What is the average nowadays of nursing home care?
It's about $6,800 on average.
Uh-huh.
So even the nicest of nest eggs could get whittled away real quick at close to $7,000 a month.
Right.
Which is why it's important to plan for this stuff, especially if there's a married couple. It breaks my heart because, again, I spoke specifically about a single person can have a house and a car and less than $2,000. But a married couple, the healthy spouse can keep half of the countable assets. So the healthy spouse can have a house, a car, and up to $117,000. Okay? So it's entirely different for a single person than it is for a married couple. And again, common sense is thrown out the window when you're talking about Medicaid. It would really behoove you to attend a seminar. Now, Dave Carrier is coming to town, or so I'm told. He gives seminars on a weekly basis. I strongly encourage anybody who wants to know about Medicaid to go see Dave Carrier and listen to him. He's very entertaining. People who listen to him here on WHTC on Saturday mornings know that. But it's a way of informing yourself about Medicaid and how it works, because logic is thrown out the window, and you don't want to follow your intuition, because a lot of your intuition is absolutely backwards to what the Medicaid rules allow you to do.
Another question, though, mm-hmm. along that line, do you have any idea what percentage of people in the nursing homes really are on Medicaid?
Well, you know, statistics are statistics. I've heard as high as 60%. And it really depends on the nursing home. Obviously, places like Freedom Village, they don't take Medicaid. Providence does. Heritage does. Rest Haven does. Tender Care does. But even at those places, some of the residents there are private pay.
Uh-huh.
And some of the residents there are on Medicaid.
Sure.
So at any given time, I don't know the exact specific percentage, but at any given time, I would say somewhere between 40 and 60% are on Medicaid because they simply ran out of money.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's understandable.
Yep. Yeah.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah.
Good morning. You're online with the attorney.
Okay. This may be a little bit off the wall, but to say somebody was, they knew they were going in for Alzheimer's.
Mm-hmm.
What if they divorced?
Mm.
And divorced early?
Sure.
And then they would be both separate.
Actually, that's what people used to do. They used to divorce so that, you know, the healthy spouse would at least be able to keep her half of the assets, right?
Right.
Well, the reality is the Medicaid rules don't require you to do that. The Medicaid rules say, look, if you've got a married couple, not only can the healthy spouse keep half of the assets, plus the house, plus the car, you can also take the nursing home spouse's assets, and rather than spend them down to $2,000, you can take the nursing home spouse's assets and put them into a Medicaid trust. Okay, and not many people know what a Medicaid trust is, but if you, the nursing home spouse, rather than spending all of his or her money, you can take those assets, put them into a Medicaid trust, and that afternoon he's on Medicaid. So you don't have to divorce anymore. A lot of people used to go through the divorce, and you know, for a lot of different reasons, I'm not in favor of that. But the reality is you don't have to do that because you can take your excess assets and put them into a Medicaid trust. And you'll be on Medicaid, and the healthy spouse then will have access to all of their assets. I think we lost him.
Okay.
But the reality is that you don't have to spend all your money. You can put the excess assets, the assets that you have to get rid of.
Yeah.
You can put those into a Medicaid trust and go on Medicaid.
All right, time out for some weather. Weather brought to you by the Wooden Shoe Restaurant. Now, through Sunday, buy a Hershey Kiss for $1. Proceeds go to Disabilities Network, Lakeshore. That's a nice idea. And for today, it's afternoon showers, snow showers, that is, with a high of 24. And tonight, overnight snow showers, a low of 10. And tomorrow, mostly cloudy with a high of 21. And presently, we're at 24 degrees here in the Tulip City. And let's see if we have another call coming in. Good morning. You're online with the attorney. Hello, anyone there?
Nope, lost him.
Thought I heard someone there.
Yeah. Don't you have a Bowerman's Strawberries commercial we can, I mean...
That's about time, isn't
we've
it?
All got, yeah, that's right. We've all
yeah,
got I'm cabin fever.
I'm running low on frozen blueberries.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll look tell you that.
Look forward to picking them. But I actually had a Narnia-type morning yesterday. I was after I dropped my son off at school. I'm driving into the office. The sun was shining.
I know.
And
you know,
it started warming up a little bit, and I kind of felt out like I was in C.S. Lewis's book, and
right.
Winter's turning into spring, and that's a good feeling.
They tell me that the lake is 88% frozen over.
No kidding. How about Lake Superior?
Lake Superior was frozen over a couple of weeks ago.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's a lot further north, of course.
Sure, but it's a big body of water, and it's deep.
It
it's deep.
Very deep, and a lot of waves, too.
Wow. And this global warming is really wreaking havoc, isn't it?
It is. It is. Oh. And I wonder if Al is paying attention.
Yeah, and that's and everybody thinks, well, this means global warming isn't happening. Well, the dynamics of the atmosphere indicate that this is being caused by global warming, and we're not.
I think my take on that is that climate change will always happen.
Yep. What's causing it is the problem.
Global warming is happening.
Well, it's happening on Mars. It's happening on Earth. The average temperature of the of
nobody
on the
lives on Mars to make it happen.
That's right. So the fact that it's warming is indisputable. The question is what's causing the warming?
It? Yes.
That's the $64,000 question.
We probably will never know.
Not in my lifetime or years.
Well, Ken, we're about out of time. I do thank you very much for being our guest this morning here on Talk to Town.
It's been my pleasure.
And making with all your knowledge of the legal system.
Yeah, well, I appreciate it.
All right.
Stay warm.